It's not a Jewish rock group, nor is it a basketball team of Yeshiva University, nor is it a sports organization sponsored by the World Zionist Organization, the Maccabim. Maccabees, the Hashmonaim, were the central figures of the Hanukkah story, as we all know. And the question is, can we identify any individual or grouping in modern society as being the kind of stuff that made up the Hashmonaim? Was it a one-shot deal in history? If we can somehow put our fingers and identify who they were, and I'm not talking about names. Names, you know, we're familiar with the names and the history, but to try to understand, to define them, and in order to perhaps recognize in our own society that we also have some Hashmonaim floating around within us. And who might they be? If you think in terms of the Hashmonaim being, you know, very traditional Jews, the Hellenists of the day, obviously devout to Jews, Torah observant Jews, but also the ability to fight and deal with both political and military issues at the same time, without being in contradiction with each other. In a general type of overview of the Hashmonaim, would we see anybody today that would fit the bill of being a modern day Hashmonai? You take people, many people in this country who are sitting and learning, as we use the phrase, are they battle ready? Many of them are not. Are all the battle ready soldiers of the Israeli army fit the bill of being Yai Shamayim and God fearing and Torah observant and knowledgeable and leaders and so on, and anti modern? I have nothing to do with nothing against modern, but there are certain downsides to, let's say, Western civilization. A person completely moved away from any of that kind of stuff, not culturally assimilated on any level. Can we really put a finger on anybody? Anybody really fits the bill as an individual or even as grouping? We came in Aliyah in 79, so that Hanukkah, it was the Hanukkah of Tashin Mem, that time, I know it's a hard thing to believe, but we didn't have cable TV in those days. Not only did we not have cable TV, but we didn't even have Channel 2. So it was ridiculous to call it Channel 1. It was called Televizia Yisraelit, Israel TV, the one and only. And the one and only produced a documentary for that Hanukkah called Safra V'Saifa. Safra V'Saifa in Aramaic is Sefer V'Hasayif, the book and the sword. And it's based on a medrash in Bereshit Rabbah on the psukim that when Adam and Chava were ejected from Gan Eden, so the Torah says that Kadosh Baruch Hu put the kruvim and cherev ha-metapechet l'shmor derech etz ha-chayim, that there was a kruvim and some type of a revolving sword that was that protected the gate of Gan Eden. So normally explained, that's why we learned it in first grade, that no longer was there an entry into Gan Eden because there were these barriers there. But of course the pshat could also be l'shmor derech etz ha-chayim, that Adam and Chava were given two tools on how to survive life. Derech Eitz HaChayim means how to get through life. So one is the Kruvim. Remember the Rav in a drasha that he gave to the Mizrahi many, many years ago, it's found in the book Chamesh Parashot. He says Kruvim only shows up one other time in the Chumash, and that's in Parsha Truma, and the ornaments that cover the Aron Brit, which house the Luchot and the Sefer Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu writes at the end of his life. So the Kruvim is the symbol of the Sefer, the book. Whereas the cherev is the symbol of power. And power doesn't only mean military, it also means military, but it means clout. It can mean social clout, economic clout, whatever that might be. And what the Torah was telling Adam and Chava is that, and humanity at large, is in order to survive the derech etz ha-chayim, you have to have some type of a, and why you, they love this word, synthesis, of the sefer and the sayif. And that's what the Medrash calls Safra V'Saifa. So the Israel TV produced a film about Yeshivot Hezder. Where Yeshivot Hezder, it's one institution that promotes both the Sefer, study of Torah, as well as military readiness, the saifa, the cherev part. And while you did not yet have such a proliferation of yeshivotas there in 1979 as we have today, but nevertheless, there was enough to choose from. And the TV decided to focus on Yeshivat HaRetzion and the lunch food for the safer part, and for the Beis Medrash part of the Hesder, and the Yeshiva in Kiryat Shmona, where they filmed the Chayalim on site in their military training. So they were the sword part of it. It was very nicely done, about 3/4 of an hour. You know, annotated. It was explained. So you got an idea that there might be a personality type of Chashmonai in our day, and that's why they screened it on Hanukkah, just so that we get an idea that the Chashmonaim weren't alone in this. But that's not all that being a Chashmonai is all about, being a student of Yeshivat Hesder. We examine the Al HaNisim that we say every day in the Tefillah and Shmoneh Esrei and in Birkat HaMazon. We discover that we actually do have a multifaceted definition of who are the Chashmonaim. So let's look at source number one. Source number one comes from Machzor Vitri. When you say the word Machzor, you usually think of a Siddur for Yamim Tovim. So a Siddur is a Siddur, for the word Seder, where everything is in order. But a Yom Tov Siddur is also everything is in order for Yom Tov. Except that sometimes in Europe, they would call a Siddur a Siddur, and a Machzor a Machzor, and a Machzor a Siddur, and a Siddur a Machzor. Those are two terms that are interchangeable. Only later did it become identified that a machzor was a special siddur. So there's a machzor for Rosh Hashanah Kippur and a machzor for Shalosh Regalim, a Pesach Shavuot Sukkot. But the regular day is a siddur. But the days of Rashi and his students, a siddur also was a machzor. Machzor means choser, it repeats itself. Anything that repeats itself, so it was put down in writing. So Machzor Vitri. Vitri is a town in France. And this is a siddur that was put together by students of Rashi, reflecting Rashi's halachic point of view and nusach. And here we have the Al HaNisim in the Machzor Vitri. So it's number one. Al HaNisim, Vala Purkan, Vala Gvurot, Vala Chuot, Vala Milchamot. And I'll just parenthetically say that the entire tefillah is in Hebrew, except for the word Purkan. Purkan is Aramaic. Yikum Purkan min Shemaya, we say on Shabbat. And Purkan means a Yeshua, Hatzalah. You know, Kadosh Baruch Hu should send, in English they use the word salvation, except that has Christian connotations. But it means to get us out of the mess, bail us out of the mess. And the Rav said, why is this word in Aramaic? I mean, why did we have a Hebrew? She said, we have to ask ourselves, what word is missing from the list of Nisim and Gvurot and Shuot and Milchamot and Nechamot? Some people have also that. What's missing? She says one word that's conspicuously absent from the listing. He says it's geula, redemption. Geula is not used in the context of Hanukkah and Purim. Why? So the Rav said that geula was reserved for two occasions in Jewish history. For the redemption from Egypt, from geula in Mitzrayim, and from the future redemption. Everything else is a Yeshua. Kadosh Baruch Hu helped us out. Helped us here, helped us there. But not to be confused with the word geula. So in order that we should understand that there is no geula factor in the Al HaNisim, so it was like reduced to Aramaic, Al HaPurkan. It's a thought by the Rav, okay? And then it reads, Al HaNisim, Al HaPurkan, Al Gvot, Al Shvot, Al Muhammad. And then there are two words that we don't have in our Nusach, but it just means, Pdut U'Purkan Shasita Laboteinu, Bayamim Ahim, U'Bazman Hazeh. Now this Vav, U'Bazman Hazeh, is critical, because there are two different opinions as to in the nusach of the bracha that we say at candle lighting, the second bracha, Sha'asa Nisim Lavoteinu, do you say Bayamim Ahem Bazman Hazeh, like most of us do, if not all of us, or Bayamim Ahem Ubazman Hazeh, as you see here, the version of the Machzor Vitri. The Maharshal, Morenu Rav Shlomo Luria, who lived in the 16th century, Lublin, he deals with the issue on whether the authentic Girsa in Ashkenaz is U'Bazman Hazeh or Bazman Hazeh. What's the difference between the two? So Bazman Hazeh means, Bayamim Ahim Bazman Hazeh, in those days, like a long time ago, 2,020 years ago, Bazman Hazeh on this target date, on the 25th of Kislev, or the 14th of Adar, that's what it means, Bazman Hazeh, this date. Whereas if you say Bayamim Ahim U'Bazman Hazeh, you're saying something entirely different. You're saying just as a Kadosh Baruch Hu performed Nisim then, the potential for such Nisim exists in this very day, U'Bazman Hazeh, today as well. And that strikes a very, very interesting chord, especially for those Jewish communities that required help in a very, very immediate way. And it's no wonder that some of the Ashkenazi communities in the Middle Ages had Bayamim Ahem Ubas Manaseh. In spite of the fact that the Marashal favors the without the Vav, which is the exact way that we do it today, by Mimahem Basmanazeh. But the Vav there is not an accident of the printer. There are two different versions. And now what you have is the Nusach of the Alayishim for Chanukah, almost word for word as we have it. B'imei Matityahu ben Yochanan Kohen Gadol Chashbonai Uvanav Kishamda Ma'alehem Malchut Yavan HaRasha'alam Chay Yisrael להשכיחם מתורתך ולהבירם מחוקי רצונך ואתה ברחמך רבים עמדת להם בעת צרתם. קדוש ברוך הוא did a few things for us. הוא עמד להם בעת צרתם. We were in dire straits and he stood up for us. רבת את ריבם, like he fought our battle, דנת את דינם, he saw justice here on our part, נקמת את נקמתם, he took revenge where revenge had to be taken. So this is all what a Kadosh Baruch Hu did. And who Masar, he gave over, in a word, the Greeks and the Jewish Hellenists in the hands of the Hashmonaim. It could have been said in one sentence. Masarta, you know, whatever, Yevanim or Mityavdim, Biyad Bidei HaChashmonaim, and move on. But instead of saying that, the Greeks and the Greek Hellenists, the Jewish Hellenists, and the Hashmonaim are now defined in five different ways who they are. Aleph, Giborim Biyat Chalashim. The strong were given over to the weak. Rabim Biyat Me'atim, the multitudes by the few. Tmeim Biyat Tahorim, those who are defiled, spiritually impure, were given over by those who are pure. Rishaim Biyat Tzadikim, the wicked were given in the hands of the righteous. Zeidim Biyat Oskei Torotecha. And Zaydin means those who are disavowing anything of our tradition, which means it's clearly against Jews who are on the other side. Biad Oskei Torotecha, those who are followers and involved in our Torah. So you have five different expressions here of who are the Hashmonaim. They are Chalashim, they are Tahorim, Ba'atim, they are Tahorim, they are Tzadikim, they are Oskei Torotecha. Examining these five, the last three, I think, make a lot of sense. We're dealing with people who are just going in the reverse now. Oskei Torotecha, right? The Hashmonaim were those who were involved in the tradition of Torah. They were the Tzadikim in this scenario. They were the Tohorim, the pure ones in this scenario. But what does it mean, Me'atim? They were the few. Is it such a great virtue to be the few? Is that something that... That is an ideal situation, or that's what happened, and miraculously we pulled through. The Torah in Dvarim tells us that Kadosh Baruch Hu picked us lo merubchem, not because of multitudes of Jews. It has to do with the fact that Kadosh Baruch Hu loved Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. He promised them certain promises, and he had to attend to the promises. So don't think that, you know, because you were grace at Tzadikim, so that's why you're marching into Eretz Yisrael. Kadosh Baruch Hu had a bill to fill, to pay up, a debt to pay to Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. Lo merubchem, it says, not because you were multitudes. And that question comes up in the book of the Kuzari of Rabbi Yehuda Levi, where the author of the Melech Kazar, the one playing the role of the nations of the world, will ask the Chaver, who's the representative of Am Yisrael. So I don't understand. You take a look at Christianity, has multitudes and Islam, multitudes. And you, Jewish people, you're dropping the bucket. You're dropping the bucket. So why do you think that you're the absolute religion and everybody else is the false religion? And Rabbi Yehuda Levi, through the mouthpiece of the Chaver in the book of the Kuzari, goes on to explain that democracy, that the truth is not subject to a democratic vote. Right? If we're going to take a vote right now, to suspend the law of gravity, even if it would be unanimous in this room, it's not going to happen. Because something that's an empirical truth cannot be repealed by a unanimous vote. Like, Yerushalayim is not part of Am Yisrael. L'mashal, for example. Right? You can't take a vote on something like that. You can't do that. It's you can see that this world is a world that you can vote on anything. but it has no status, it has no bearing on the absolute truth, irrespective of of how the world looks at it. In Hallel, we said this morning, ki kol adam kozev. Every person, there are a bunch of liars out there. I mean, unfortunately, we see it. There's no respect of the truth or any absolute truth. But we have to live by what we believe in. The Chashmonaim indeed were oskei toatecha, and they were tzadikim, and they were tohohim. But what does it mean, ma'atim? They were few. So, okay, so few is not really a virtue. When the Torah says lo mirukhem, it doesn't say this is a great ideal. It just, that's the way it is, and it doesn't detract from the fact that Am Yisrael is representing something pure. So we shouldn't see it in terms of the success of Am Yisrael in terms of pure numbers. But to wave the banner and say, haha, we're from the few, that's a question mark. But even further, chalashim. I mean, to say, and we were weaklings, yay! I mean, well, what exactly are we saying here? I'm saying, I don't know if you caught it when I started, that if we're trying to identify now who might be a modern Chashmonai as an individual, as a grouping, who would be the chalashim? Who would be the chalashim? Oskei Tovatecha, I think we can find a few. And tzadikim, maybe some less, but we might be able to find them. Not everybody who's an Oseik Torah is by definition a tzaddik, by the way. I say this without humor, by the way. Because I have too much experience in the world of abuse with people who are big tzaddikim in the public face. But in the private sector, very, very private sector, far from being tzaddikim. So it says, Anistarot Hashem Elokeinu. You know, try to tell that to somebody, that you can't fool the Kadosh Baruch Hu at the end of the day, right? Lincoln said this a long time ago. You can fool some of the people some of the time, can't fool all the people all the time, can't fool the Kadosh Baruch Hu, never, never. Never fool the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And it's the Hot Hashem
Rukain. So Chalashim might be that some of the followers, while they were few in number,
right,
they were influenced by Hellenism, so they were Chalash in that, and then they came over and saw the life came up?
Not sure, because here we're focusing on the Chashmonaim. This is the grouping that was the agent of a Kadosh Baruch Hu on this world to bring about the miracle. And who are they? The A, B, C, D, and E. And when we look at this, we're trying to figure out, and we try to define who the chalash is in a positive sense. Because if I don't see this in a positive sense, the whole thing doesn't make sense. What? What?
Kohanim.
But why would they be chalashim?
They could be children or old people who can't help anything, but they're spiritually.
Yeah, but there's no indication that the Chashmonaim were weaklings in terms of they were old. Yehuda Maccabee was not an old man at all. They were all killed one after the other at the end of the day, because the war went on for 18 years after the Hanukkah episode. This was just what they call a lull in the action, nothing more than that. But the pure independence took place 18 years later, and Shimon Chashmonai is a lone survivor, and he himself gets killed at the end. So they were not old people. They were very much not old people. They were few, that's for sure. And the question is going to have to define, what does it mean few? And what does it mean weak? So this is going to be the hardest nut to crack, so we'll start with that. Who are the chalashim? Number one, the term gibor. The giborim, is that a positive term in Tanakh, or is it a negative term? Well, it's actually a parva term. It's not the bisari, not chalavi. Depends who you're talking about. Nimrod is gibor chayil. Gibor, very nice. But take a look at source number two. This is about David HaMelech. Shaul HaMelech is depressed and in a very modern sense calls for music therapy, something that we know about today, modern psychology. Vayomer Shaul el Avadav, Shaul tells his servants, Re'una li ish meitiv linagen ve'viotim elai, bring me somebody who really knows how to strike up a good chord, a good note on an instrument. One of his servants responded, "Hinei ra'iti ben leYishai beit halachmi." Yeah, I happen to know of one of the sons, actually a young son of Yishai, who lives in Beit Lechem. Yodei nagen. Yeah, he knows how to play. V'gibor chayil. Ve'ish milchama. He's a warrior as well. Unavon davar. He understands. He's got seichel. He understands things. Ve'ish toar. He's a good-looking person. Vashem imo. Kadosh Baruch Hu is with this man. Here's your man. Here's your man you want to bring in, and he should play for you. Clearly, Gibor Chayil is a positive phrase here in this context. But this is the catch. In order to be a Gibor in the Tanakh sense, that should be a positive sense, it has to go with Hashem Imo. The difference between a Gibor with Hashem and a Gibor without Hashem, a Gibor without Hashem is somebody who's physically strong, well battle tested, he's got the proper armaments and defense on him, and he puts all his trust in that power. What the Torah says, Kochi va'otzem yadi asa li et achayel hazeh. Look how strong I am. Strong and brave. That's the Gibor of Nimrod. The Gibor Chayil of the Torah is someone who says, look, I might be ready for war. The only thing is that on paper, the battle is going to go against me because I don't think I'm going to be able to overcome the enemy. The enemy is stronger than I am. Even though I'm prepared, I'm not a weakling, I'm not a wimp, but I'm, and that can cause panic. Now take a look what happens to Yaakov Avinu, Parshat Vayishlach, in source 3. Vayashuvu amalachim al Yaakov lemor, the messengers who Yaakov sent out return, and they say, Banu alachicha leisav, yeah, we actually met up with your brother Esav, v'gam olech likratcha v'arba meyot ish imo. What does this mean? He's coming with 400 people. But he's going to come with a welcoming committee that they're going to all give you a big shalom aleichem. No, he's coming to murder you. No, so he didn't forget after 20 years. He haven't forgotten anything. Hinei Esav Achicha mitnachem lechan lahargecha is still on the books. It's still there. And Yaakov Avinu realizes vayira Yaakov ma'od. He panics out. Vayetzer lo. Vayachatz et ha'am asher ito, v'et ha'tzon, v'et ha'bakar, v'et ha'gmalim, l'shrim ha'chanot, splits everything into two, his whole camp. V'yom, and he says, im yavoi yisav al ha'machane ha'chat v'ikahu, v'ya ha'machane ha'nishah l'fleita. If Esav is going to hit one side, at least the other side will be able to flee. This is not a battle strategy. This is called an exit strategy. What kind of war is he prepared for? To sustain a loss of 50%. That's not exactly battle readiness. Yet, Rashi tells us that Yaakov Avinu prepares himself for three things. L'doron, l'tfilah, l'milchama. The first, he's going to offer gifts. Gifts, I call it in modern language, the diplomatic initiative. That's what it is. Try to smear him up a little bit. And that doesn't work, so he's going to have to daven. He's going to have to be prepared for war. And being prepared for war does not mean that I'm going to split the camp in two and that's it. Well, at least I'll have somebody survive. That's not what it means, prepare for war. But whatever his preparation for war was, it was overcome by fear, natural fear, because he thought that on paper he's not going to win this war. And what he does is he turns to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hatzileni na miyad achi miyad Esav. Brings HaKadosh Baruch Hu into the picture. And that's a gibor in the sense of David HaMelech. Al gibor chayil v'ashem imo. We know the pasuk in Tehillim, Ele barecha ve'ele basusim, v'anachnu b'shem Hashem alakeinu naskir. Say those go with their horse and chariots, but we go with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Those who think that David HaMelech went to battle just with the Sefer Tehillim, you know, that's how we went to engage in battle against the Plishtim and others, make a big mistake. The pshat is Ele barecha ve'ele basusim bilvad. There are those who only put all their hopes in their armament and their armor and their tanks and their artillery and their air force, that everything is put into there. That's what's going to make it or break it. We have that also, says David HaMelech. With that, we bring a Kadosh Baruch Hu into the picture. So that is a Gibor Chayil who's Hashem Imo. But what really brings the person to bring a Kadosh Baruch Hu into the picture? A weakness, but a weakness not in a negative sense. It's a weakness of humility. It's a weakness that says, I can't do this without a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Those were the chalashim of the Chashmonaim. It wasn't that they were weaklings. They weren't weaklings. As individuals, they were strong. They were brave, very, very brave. But they realized that with everything that they had, and even using interesting guerrilla warfare, which against a regular army, can do wonders. Ask the North Vietnamese and Viet Cong what you can do with guerrilla warfare against the great United States of America after 8 years drive them out of a country and win a war. So yesterday, Arya Golan on Rashid Ben at 7:05 says, here, Bibi Netanyahu has declared war on the United States of America. I mean, it's a verbal war and so on. But who knows where this is going to end up? And oy vavoy if we win. Right, there was a, what was it called? The mouse that roared. Right, it was a film. Right. Oy vavoy if they win. So this is the Chashmonaim. This is the Chulshah of the Chashmonaim. And Yaakov Avinu, the personality of Yaakov Avinu, moves on with Am Yisrael through every parasha of Galut, as the Ramban tells us. And we always feared the issues at hand in each generation. Of course, there was what to fear, unfortunately. There was what to fear. But what does Yirmiyahu say? No, for you to three times throughout the Sefer, and so it's number four, Vata, Al Tira Avdi Yaakov. This is became the focus of a niggun of Matzah Shabbos Miras. Let's just mention the memory of Ben Zion Shenker, Zichron Levracha, who would sing his Majetz and Negunim to all the Matzah Shabbos songs. Al Tira Avdi Yaakov. Why a Matzah Shabbos? Because there's a Masoret that Elyon Avi will show up Matzah Shabbos. Mm-hmm. He won't come on Friday because people are busy preparing for Shabbos. That's what Gemara says. He won't come on Friday or Erev Yom Tov, because it'll mess up everything, The children's on the plot already. Now Mashiach. Now's not time for Mashiach. Matzah Shabbos. You can come on the Yo'anavi. So, Al Tira Avdi Yaakov. This is the same assurance that Yaakov Avinu receives in Parashat Vayishlach. We receive it every Matzah Shabbos. Va'al Tichat Yisrael, ki hirni Moshiachami Rachok, v'tzarachami Eretz Shibyam, v'shav Yaakov, v'shakeit v'shanan v'ein machrit. Nothing to fear. I'm with you, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And even in battle, so we know that an announcement was made before Am Yisrael's army went out to battle. And one of the announcements was that several people were temporarily, freed partially from the actual battle for some of the wars, not all the wars. There's somebody who built a new house and planted a new vineyard or was engaged. But then there's a fourth. Who's the fourth? It says in source number 5, and the person, the chayala, was scared. Because this is contagious on the battlefield. You don't need another soldier being infected with your panic-stricken, being what we call helim krav, being battle fatigued and so on. So the Mishnah tells us in source number 6, V'yasfu ha-shotrim l'daber al ha'am, Rabbi Akiva Amar says, Hayarei v'racha levav kimashma'o. Means a person is panicking. Simple, exactly the way you understood it. Scared out of his wits. She'eino yochol la'amod b'kishrei ha-milchama, v'lirot cherev shlufa. He's just not able to take the heat of battle. Rabbi Yosef Aglili argues, and he says, no. It means Hayarei v'racha levav, means zeo ha-mityarei min ha-avira shebiyado. He knows he has some sins in his file. And he knows that in Hebrew we say, Ein kadur b'li ketovet. There's no bullet without an address. And the Kadosh Baruch Hu, God forbid, get him back on the battlefield. And he's nervous. He's good and nervous for going out to war. The reason why the Torah freed the other three guys, the guy built a new house and planted a vineyard, the guy got engaged, that was just to protect the dignity of the fourth. Because if they wouldn't have the other three, so all those who would be leaving, they would already be contaminated with stain of being a Russia. Oh, this guy must be a Russia, an evil person, so that's why he doesn't want to go to battle. So in order to protect his kavod, so the Torah says, you guys can go, and you guys can go, and yours guys can go. So that Russia will be, bottle b'shishim in the others. No, but people won't suspect that he's leaving because he fears his sins. They'll say, he must have planted a new vineyard or something like that. So it's an interesting interesting take the way Chazal see this. But what do we see from this view of Rav Yosef Lili? That if you cannot bring a Kadosh Baruch Hu into the picture, then there's what to worry about. There's really what to worry about on battlefield. And the Rambam, interestingly, takes a little bit of both of these views. In source number 7, Mi ish hayarei barach alevav, kimashmo, exactly the way you understood it, like Rabbi Akiva, it means somebody who's panicking out. She'ein b'libo koach la'amod b'kishrei milchamah, doesn't have the guts to stand up to war. U'me'achar she'yikanez b'kishrei milchamah, but now that you're there, yish'an al mikveh Yisrael u'moshi'o be'aytzara, you should lean on, rely on, the hope of Israel, mikveh Yisrael is a nickname of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who helps in the time of trouble. V'yeda, and you should know, shal yichod Hashem hu oseh milchama. He's doing this for the glorification of God's name. V'yasim nafsho b'chapon, you put your life in his palm. V'lo yira, v'lo yifchad, v'lo yachshov, v'lo bishto, v'lo banav. Don't think about your wife, your kids, just blot it out. Don't fear, just do the battle like you should. Concentrate. Yifnel mikol devam, don't anything that detracts you from the war. If you're going to start getting detracted and getting a little bit fuzzy, it's an avera. As it says, Al yirach levavchem, al tiru, al tachpazu, al tarzu mibneihem. God forbid if some soldier gets killed because if you're, you're being a little delirious here, it's going to be your responsibility. And if he doesn't go to battle with everything he's got, then he's going to be held responsible for the fallen soldiers. And it's interesting that the Rambam uses the phrase "b'chol libo v'chol nafsho." That's "b'chol levavcha v'chol nafshecha," the way we create our Kadosh Baruch Hu. And here he's got to give it all he has, all he has. But he was yish'an al mikveh Yisrael. He brought a Kadosh Baruch Hu into the picture, and therefore now there's no need. Altira of the Yaakov. This is what the Rambam is saying. Guiding the Jewish soldier in battle. Which means, yeah, of course you're chalash. We should be chalash. We should be humble enough to know that on the battlefield, anything can happen. Anything that can change the course of my personal life, the life of the family. We know very well, unfortunately, from the families of the fallen, families of the wounded, it's just a new life. Everything becomes defined in terms of that day when the bad news was brought to the family. And everything's just what was and now what is. It's two different worlds. And that's a chulsha. It leads a person to this type of inner weakness. But the Rambam tells us and encourages us, we can overcome this and bring a Kadosh Baruch Hu into the picture. B'chol levavcha, b'chol nafshecha. And you go to battle. B'chol libo, b'chol nafsho. And that's how we become strong. This was the Chashmonaim. They were the Chalashim who were able to overcome the Gibore Chayil of Nimrod, who just trusted, their weapons and their might, physical might, and their great brains of strategy, and so on. And against that, the Chashmonaim were the Chalashim. And I dare say that such Chalashim we do have today. We have such people today who fit the bill of exactly what the Rambam's talking about. Maybe not every chayal in the Israeli army, or every shoter, every policeman, but there are enough in this country. I would even go so far to say that, and unfortunately we've seen many, many, many wars. I assume that most of us sitting here are Olim Chadashim at some stage, but at one point you become an Olev Vatik, right? At what point, Israelis will never ever give us the credit of being Israelis. Just forget, if you have such a dream, forget about it. Because I thought in my naivete that at one point I would become regarded as Israeli. No, you're an American rabbi. You're an American rabbi. I can't shake it. And Baruch Hashem, my Ivrit is, let's just say, beseder. And went to the army, and I went to Israeli university, and all my kids went to the army, and Shirut Lumi, and did everything. And my kids don't wear ties and jackets, and their bar mitzvahs, their shirts were out, and they didn't have socks on their sandalim. And how much more can I do, really? Right?
The tie.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, no, no, I can't. But I'm saying it. I raised an Israeli family here, you know, that speaks English with an accent, you know, the Kamoshetzer. Beseda, you know. So you're an Olevatik. That's the best you can get. You're an Olevatik. So when do you move from Olech Hadash to Olevatik? So it depends. According to Jewish Agency, when the 5 years are up, when you get your zchuyot of income tax and other things from that, mashkantaot, and all that stuff finishes, so you're no longer Olech Hadash. When the bank doesn't see you as an Olech Hadash, you're now an Olevatik. Okay. Others say, when the ketchup and mus and mayonnaise of Heinz starts tasting like Telma and Osem starts tasting the same as Heinz, then you're here long enough. You're here long enough, right? But the truth is, and it's a somber thought, I know exactly when you become a Levatik, when you go through a war with the country. I'm sorry to say, but it's true. You could be here for 1 year, you could be here for 10 years. If you haven't gone through a war, you're still not a Levatik. You go through one war with this country, and you have changed status to an Levatik. For me, it was the first Lebanese war. And it really did a job. It did a job. There's no question. And
That's emphasized all the more when it's your child who's involved in the war. That
absolutely.
Really underlines it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's no question about that. And then you really, really feel that you're here. So while you may never be able to be called an Israeli, but you're a Levatik, and you're with it. You're with the country.
In what way did you change?
What was that?
In what way did you change when you went through?
The whole mentality. I knew that, there was no turning back, and this is the future of the family, and the decision, if there was any quivering whatsoever, that was already a foregone conclusion. My first Miluim was in Lebanon, actually. My first Miluim. Kashering kitchens for Pesach in April 84. Yeah. In full battle gear. Yeah. So I'm saying is that this idea of being, I say that we have such chalashim. We do have. So before each war, this is where I'm getting the point, before each war, we know this, many soldiers, and I specifically talk about even non-religious soldiers, most of them in the Eidot HaMizrach department, but will ask for a tilim before going to battle. They'll want to put on tefillin before going to battle. I mean, the Chabadnikim have a field day before a war. They line up. And they're putting on tefillin on everybody, and they want to do it. And why do they want to do it? Because they don't want to go to battle without a Kadosh Baruch Hu. There's no atheist in the foxhole, for sure. But here, it's so genuine. It's so genuine. Yeah, Bakshi Jay. Yeah.
They want to see somebody die.
They want to see somebody die.
Remember, when I was in the army, okay. So I was dominant, say, let us see. Come out, dominant outside so we can see.
Yefeh mod. But it's connecting. It's connecting with HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
But aren't there some people who were born here and they don't have that, they want to know how the first questions they ask you, how is it in America? What kind of car do you have? What kind of...
Today they don't ask that anymore because they've been there. They have it. They've been there. And I think one of the greatest miracles of our day... I see, especially Dafke today, where the reports about what was done to the Yemenite Aliyah are being released, and it's not going to bring a lot of cover to some people when all this news gets out. But we know that in the 50s it was difficult here. That's an understatement, difficulty with the food rations and so on. To think that people are coming in Aliyah today from the Western world, including the great United States of America, because it's financially better off to live here. You laugh. You laugh. Just on yeshiva tuition alone. Just think of it. Look, and this, I don't use this to take a political stand, but I happen to be behind the Prime Minister now in the verbal bashing against the world on this last UN resolution. Because the bottom line, as he said it, it's not Rashi and Tosfot here. He said it openly. He said, this is not the same Israel they can kick around, 50 years ago. We're coming from a different position now, and we are a country who you're going to have to respect. You're going to have to respect us. We are a global leader in various things, and you can't take us for granted any longer. And I think that's a tremendous, tremendous development for Medinat Yisrael. It didn't happen overnight, but Baruch Hashem, this Hanukkah, it's Bazman Hazeh. There were many, many Nisim. Just this morning, I don't know if you saw the Ma'ariv on the internet, it was about water, something that I said here in the Shia 5-6 years ago already, when they started introducing the desalinization plans. I said it's going to make Masechet Ta'anit antiquated, because when there was drought of rain in Eretz Yisrael, it was a question of life and death. It was life and death here in Eretz Yisrael. And people had all the tzomot and everything. And you know, if we didn't have enough rain, the Kinneret wouldn't have enough mud water, and we'll be able to bring the water down to the Negev. And everybody's worried. And the truth is, we created the water shortage to a large degree. But Kadosh Baruch Hu gave human beings wisdom, technological ability to develop. All we have now is more than enough already. 5 plants functioning from Ashdod in the south to Akko in the north. And in the Mediterranean, there's plenty of salt water to flush out yet. Unashir, as they say. And more water is coming out of those plants than we ever drew from the Kinneret in any given winter. So the Kinneret slowly filling up, and restoring itself. Then it's going to be flushed down a little bit down the Jordan River, so that the Yama Melach will fill up a little bit more. And it's unbelievable. And there are countries in the world coming to Israel to learn how to do this. We become a global leader. It's a ness. You have to say hallel for this. Mamash. I turn the page to the second side, source number 8. Rabim Biyad Me'atim. So in 1956, I wasn't there, I was 3.5 years old, but I was just a few blocks away on Audubon Avenue in Washington Heights. But I did not hear the Rav's towering drasha, Kol Dodi Dofek, on Yom Ha'atzmaut, 1956. But the Rav delivered it in Yiddish, but he himself translated into Hebrew, and his Hebrew was remarkable. There he uses Shir HaShirim as a model of a Kadosh Baruch Hu communicating with Am Yisrael. Kol Dodi Dofek, the Ra'aya, she's the one who represents Am Yisrael. The Dod is the Kadosh Baruch Hu in the analogy. And the Kadosh Baruch Hu is knocking on the door, and she hears the door knock. But the problem is, till she gets to the door, because she has to get up, and she has to bathe, and she has to dress herself, and ois kibbutz, and this, and that. By the time she opens the door, the Dod is gone. And then she starts running after. And the Rav's whole message was, Al tachmitz et hasha'a, don't miss the opportunity. And he's saying this in 1956, 8 years after the state was established. Don't miss the opportunity. Because so many opportunities were missed already in Jewish history. So there, the Rav said, I hear 6 knockings. And the second knock was the military knock. And that's source number 8, just 2 lines. Shenit, the second knock, difikat hadod, the knocking of the dod, the Kadosh Baruch Hu, nishma'a b'stei akrav, was heard on the battlefield. Chel ha-hagana ha-katan shel Yisrael, the very small, literally miniature Israel Defense Force of 1948-49, nitzach etzet tzivotehem, there's a typo, it should be tzedek bet, tzivotehem ha-atzumim shel Arzot Abrit, the great, of shel Arzot Arav, the combined strong armies of the Arab nations. Nes, the miracle of Rabim Biyad Ma'atim, Naseh le'enenu. So how did the Rav understand Rabim Biyad Ma'atim? In pure numbers. In pure numbers. I mean, you know, I remember the Six-Day War already. I was 9th grade. But there, I remember there was combined forces of Egypt, Syria, Jordan, even little Lebanon, little Iraq. And what did we have? But what we had was a trained army. What we had was a very well-trained air force. We had things already. Not like 48. 48, what did we have? We had a Davidka that couldn't kill a fly. Made a lot of noise. Make a lot of noise. I had students also in class who used to make a lot of noise. You know, you can't hurt a fly with making a lot of noise. Do you know what the Israeli Air Force looked like in 1948? I mean, you make a paper airplane, it would probably be more potent. It wasn't terribly strong. And how Kadosh Baruch Hu pulled this off for us is nothing less than miraculous. Rabim Biyad Me'atim. And pure numbers. Simply pure numbers of soldiers. We had people who were coming from the DP camps, refugees, thrown straight to Latrun, to the battle. And some fell and were wounded. These weren't trained soldiers. They were battered people. And that's who our army was, Rabim Biyad Me'atim. So that's how the Rav understood this. But you know, Me'atim can mean something else. It doesn't always mean few in numbers, in terms of simple battleground numbers. But it also has to do with, when you fight, you have to believe that you're right. If you're not convinced that your position is correct, then it's not worth fighting for. I believe, you don't have to agree with this, but I believe that to a large degree, the reason that the many yeshiva boys who don't go to the army, it has absolutely nothing to do with that Torah study overrules defending the country. I think that's a lot of PR. And I believe it, and Rav Lichtenstein, Zichron Lebracha, said, halachically indefensible. Can't defend that position, because it's not true. So why is that used? Because they don't want to say the real reason. What's the real reason? I used to think maybe because they're chicken heads, but it's not true. It's not true. We're discovering today in what I call the grassroots revolt against the Haredi leadership. More and more Haredi kids are going to the army, and they are brave soldiers, and they're performing well. So they're not Rach Levav. No, they're not Yerei and Rach Levav. What is it? They were being indoctrinated that the state of Israel is not an appropriate mizbeach for hakrava, for sacrifice.
For what?
It was not an appropriate mizbeach for sacrifice. Same reason that our community basically didn't send soldiers to Vietnam. Same reason. Uh-huh. Same reason. Why didn't our... I lived in New York City. New York City is not a shtetl. It's not an ir nidachat. The largest Jewish center... I mean, Brooklyn that time had more Jews than Yerushalayim, unfortunately. I think it still does. But it's a very sad state of affairs. And so it's a metropolis, right? It's a main place. The United States was at war for 8 years, of which 50,000 American servicemen died, 250,000 were wounded, and millions served. I didn't know anybody. How is it you don't know anybody?
Because the Jews were on college.
How is it that you don't know anybody? Anybody, a neighbor, no cousin, no this, no that. Nobody. Because nobody, in our circles, nobody went. So those who went to YU and were studying for smicha, legitimately, fine. And the others went to draft dodging yeshivas. Mm-hmm. That's all.
And many of them became teachers in the New York City public school system because there was a shortage of teachers.
Okay, Beseda.
And I worked with many of them.
Okay, there are all kinds of reasons, not by the individuals. I'm telling you that this country, this wouldn't happen. I remember one of the wars in Gaza when I was, those days, over 10 years ago, when I was moonlighting in the commuting to Zurich. So one of the Haredi communities had a tefillah get-together, and I was very proud of them, I was very happy. A tefillah get-together on a Sunday afternoon, the Rav there was going to give a talk, fine. And he even mentioned the Israeli army once in his talk, which was a tremendous thing. I gave him a big shkoyach for that. So he asked me after the sicha, he says, and do you know anybody in the war? Here in the war in the Gaza, do you know anybody in the war? What kind of silly question that is? I said, I want to tell you, I have 3 boys in uniform right now, and my daughter's in Be'er Sheva on the front line. That's for starters. You know, anybody else you want to know about? What do you mean? I mean, heck, it's like unbelievable because they don't realize it. They don't realize it. But if you be in B'nai Brak, you might not know anybody in the war. You might not know anybody in the war. Because Medinat Yisrael is not a worthy enough of a mizbeach for hakrava. I think that's the real reason. That's the real reason. It's a very sad commentary. But I think that's why it is. And you, in order to fight, you have to be prepared for the purpose of the fight. That's why Tzal gives the chayalim tours of different places of the country. It's not to fill up time, but to impress upon them. You know, there are some chayalim never in Yerushalayim in their lives. They would come from the north, come from the south, come from North Tel Aviv, wherever, you know. Yerushalayim's dangerous, can't go to Yerushalayim. So they bring him here. They bring him here. They bring him to Yad Vashem. They take them to Poland, you know, Edim B'Madim. They try to impress upon them, Chevra, there's a reason why we're doing this. And if you're not totally convinced, you don't belong here. That's one of the reasons the Arabs can't serve in Tzal, even if they want to. Because... forget about the fact that maybe a fifth column, you know, you have to worry about that too. But you have to believe in this. If you don't believe in this, if you don't believe Liotam Chofshi Barzeno Veretzion Yushalayim, hello, this is not for you. the to be of a mi'ut, mi'ut means to go against the grain. Avram Avinu was Avram HaIvri. Everybody was going one way, he was going the other way. That's what it means to be me'atim, to go against the grain, do the unpopular thing. The Chashmonaim were able to do the unpopular thing. Because the popular thing was to go Hellenist. That was the popular thing to go, popular way to go. And they were going the other way. I once heard from Rabbi Norman Lamb, he said something in the name of the Satmar Rebbe. And Satmar Rebbe was not exactly our icon for religious Zionism, just the opposite. But it sometimes become along the Iskalti. They asked for Satmar Rebbe, even amongst the Gedolei Yisrael of Agudat Yisrael, there was some de facto recognition of the state at the end of the day. But the Satmar, they're still fighting it. Tooth and nail fighting it at every possible diplomatic, you know, demonstration, public affair. They're out to kill it. Really to beat it dead. So they said, listen, you're a shitat yachid, you're in one opinion here, you know, against everybody. So, you know, it says, rabim bi, yachid v'rabim, alacha k'rabim, a single opinion against the majority, and alacha's like the majority. So why don't you just give in? So the Satmar Rebbe said, why didn't Chazal say halacha k'rabim? The halacha's like the majority. Why did they say yachid v'rabim halacha k'rabim? What does that mean? It says it means if the yachid ba'olamo, the one and only God, is with the rabim, then halacha k'rabim. But if a Kadosh Baruch Hu is not with the majority, then the halacha is not like the rabim. And his idea was that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is not with the Zionist enterprise. That's what he believed. But it shows how defiant he was and how confident he was in his single opinion. There was another person who was a great person in his own right. His name was Professor Zeitlin from Dropsy College in Philadelphia many years ago. He was an expert in the second Beit HaMikdash eras, the Tkuvat Bayit Sheni. So he also had very unique ideas. We had a student of his who was the dean of the Bernard Revel School many years, Rabbi Sidney Honig. He was a student of this Professor Zeitlin. Remember Rabbi Honig? Yeah. So so Zeitlin was once asked also, you know, how can you say things against everybody? He says, you know, you're a distinct minority. He says, minority, single opinion. He says, me and the truth, that's already two.
Yeah, that's when
you have his father. Right, correct. So here you have Ma'atim, Rabim, Yad Ma'atim. It doesn't only mean in numbers, but also means going against the grain, the flow of everybody else, if you know you're right. And that kind of, you know, zealotness you do have today among some people, and it's positive. Now, what about the Tameyim B'yat Tahorim? Who is the Tahor? And what's the difference between being a Tahor and a Tzaddik? Rishayim B'yat Tzaddikim. So in source number 9, from Yom Kippur, the Torah says, "Ki b'yom hazeh yichaper alechem l'tayer etchem mikol chatotechem lefnei Hashem titaru." The Rav has a whole speech about this. It's in the Alei Tshuva. What's the difference between kapara and tahara? It's two different things. Kapara, atonement, is to clear the account. You have sins. You want a Kadosh Baruch Hu to erase it. So that's kapara. So what else is necessary? What is the tahara? What does that mean? So Rav says, even if you received the kapara, but your neshama was contaminated. The fear fact that you did an avera, it contaminated the neshama. And there is a process of tahara, of purging it, and bringing it back. The Rav has a whole shiur how that's accomplished. But Yom Kippur has the power not only of kapara, but also of tahara. So that's why you want people who are tohorim. Who are the tohorim? What does it mean, tohor? Tohor means like an infant. Remember from Slichot we say, gmulei chalav shelo pashu. Those infants who've just been weaned from their mother's milk, who've never tasted the taste of a sin. Gmulei chalav shelo pashu. So Medrash says in Sosa 10 that a minhag, in the beginning, it's found in the Medrash in the beginning of Sefer Vayikra, that the minhag is that we teach little kids Torah by starting Vayikra. Now I did this when I was in first grade in the Yeshiva Chavetz Chaim in Midtown Manhattan. They handed out the Chumashim Vayikra, and we were taught it in the language that Moshe Rabbeinu taught Torah, in Yiddish. Right? That's what we were told. And it was Vayikra Netgarufin El Tzu Moshe Moshe. That's the Taich, the translation of Moshe. Moshe Moshe. Right? And we learned till Sheni, and then they collected the Chumashim, and then they handed out Bereshis. And then we learned Bereshis. Why do we do this? Because it says, Amr of Yossi, Mipnei ma matchilim letinokot mitorat kohanim. Why do we start teaching Torah to little children from Chumash Vayikra? Torat kohanim is Chumash Vayikra. Im kein yatchil lahem mibreshit. Why don't we start from Breshit? Ela amara kadosh baruch hu. God said, ma korbanot ha'orim, the korbanot are pure. Vahatinokot tehorim, and these little Yiddish kindalach are pure. Yavo tehorim v'yitasku b'tehorim. Let the pure deal with the pure. It's a beautiful idea. But it means the little ones, they are the tahar tehorim. And so much so, when on a Yom Tzom or Yomim Noroim, we're looking for a shlich tzibor, so you don't pick a name out of the hat from somebody in shul. And you don't necessarily look for the most trained, you know, beautiful melodical voice. The Gemara tells us a whole schedule of criteria, which the author of the Hinani He'ani Mima'as, before Yom Kippur's, Rosh Hashanah Kippur's Musaf, the Kabel Tfilati, Kitfilat Zakein V'Ragil, Firkona Er, Sikonom Gudal, Muharab Adat, Mabriot, a whole list of criteria. And the Chazan says, Alavai, you should accept my Tfilah as if I fit the bill of A, B, C, D. Where does that come from? It comes from the Gemara Masechet Tanit Daf Tet Zayin. So Pirko Na'eh, what does that mean? Source 11, Omar Abaye, Ze Shelo Yatza Shem Ra V'Yalduto. When he was young, he did not have a bad impression or bad reputation. Mimbele, it wasn't that he was 60 years old or 50 years old, he was a shovav, he was this, that, but then he does tshuva at the end of his life. Let's make him the chazan. No. We want somebody who had a clean record early in the game. Early in the game, he was tahor. These were the chashmonoim, the tahorim. They were not somebody who during the time of whatever, you know, slipped and this and that. They were tahorim the entire time. And who is the tzaddik? So the Rambam tells us something fascinating in Source 12, in Hilchot Teshuvah. He says, do not accept what the nations of the world and some even Jewish thinkers suggested determinism. You're born to be this, you're born to be that. Rambam believes in free will. Al yavor b'machshavtecha davar zeh. Don't think for one moment. Shomrim tipshei umot olam, that the idiots of the world, Verov golmei bnei Yisrael, and the infantile Jews, Shakadosh Baruch Hu gozer al adam mitchilat briyato liyot tzadik or rasha. The Kadosh Baruch Hu ordains from the moment you're created that you're going to be a tzadik or a rasha. Ein adavar kein, nonsense. Ela kol adam ra'ui lo liyot tzadik ke Moshe Rabbeinu or rasha ki Yaravam. You can be a tzadik like Moshe Rabbeinu. How can you be a tzadik like Moshe Rabbeinu? It doesn't say lo kam bi Yisrael ke Moshe od. So the answer is that pasuk says about prophecy, nevuah. No one's going to be a prophet like Moshe. Not even Melech HaMashiach. The Rambam in another place says that Melech HaMashiach will be a great Navi, samuch, or karov, the nevuat Moshe Rabbeinu. Close, but not close enough. He will not hit the nevuat Moshe Rabbeinu. Lo kam bi Yisrael ke Moshe od. And it's one of his 13 principles, Moshe Rabbeinu, as a prophet. But tzaddik is something else. Tzaddik means every moment in life, we're making decisions. And if we would ask ourselves each time, we don't, but if we would, is the Kadosh Baruch Hu happy with that decision? If the answer is yes, so on that decision, you're a tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu, because he also answered yes. But what about the decision in another 5 minutes? Did you answer yes? Kadosh Baruch Hu happy with that decision? If you can go life through life asking that question, is the Kadosh Baruch Hu happy with that decision? And I think the answer is yes. You're a tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu. That's what it means. Tzaddik and Moshe Rabbeinu means you've answered yes, you've taken a decision, you've made the choice, and you believe that your choice is in line with the will of God. That means a tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu. But it requires that you're cognizant of it. And the Chashmonaim were made of that stuff, that they were cognizant of, that they were doing things in line with the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's why they were tzaddikim. So they were tzaddikim, and they were tahorim, and they were ma'atim, and they were also chalashim in the positive sense, the way we describe. What's the last one? V'zeidim biyad oskei toratecha. A lot of people are osek batorah. But what's the difference? So in Source 13, at the very end, the tour, Rabbi Yaakov ben Asher, the forerunner of Shulchan Aruch, brings two different versions of the bracha that we say in the morning for Birkat HaTorah. He says, Zu nuscha, this is the nusach of the bracha. Bet alef yud bochat Hashem elokeinu melech olam, sher kitchanu b'zav tzivanu, al divrei Torah. Now the Sfaradim say this till this very day. The nusach Ashkenazim, the last line, la'asok b'divrei Torah. What's the difference between al divrei Torah and la'asok b'divrei Torah? Al divrei Torah means on Torah study. So that seems to be fine. Rambam has that. Shulchan Aruch has that. What does it mean, la'asok b'divrei Torah? So Pesach Shabbat, there were an unusual amount of posters plastered on the wall of the shul outside, which people in shul don't like. It's not a bulletin board. But nevertheless, if somebody does it 5 minutes before Shabbos, and it's there, so it's there. So there was an ad. Some person here in Yerushalayim put out an ad, and it was an ad for enlisting people, predominantly yeshiva boys, for a profession. Very nice, to get them to work and make a living, but a living within the framework of Torah. So what is it for? It's a course to learn how to write a Sefer Torah, Tefillin, a Mezuzah, Stam, because Sefer Stam, Shechita, be a Mashgiach, Brit Milah, to be a Moyel, all kinds of what we call Klei Kodesh, all kinds of things. And the pitch was, you know, you can be Mefarnes, you can make a living, and not leave the world of Torah. How great this is. The Rav, I heard this from my father once. The Rav explained, what does La'asok B'Divrei Torah mean? Means to take your learning of the Beit Midrash to the Beit Esek, to your work out there, to the factory, to the field, to the office, and apply what you studied in the Beit Midrash, and that's where Torah makes its mark. Not in the Beit Midrash, but in the Esek, on the job. And the job is not in the Ohel Shel Torah, where Shamshon Fal Hirsch once said, Tzadik HaTamar Yifrach Ke'erez Bavanon Yizkeh. Shetulim Bevet Hashem. Yeah, the saplings are Bevet Hashem. But where are the fruits? Bechatzrot Beit Elokeinu Yafrichu. The prachim are outside the Beit Midrash. That's where you're going to want to see dividends, not inside the Beit Midrash. Because everybody can sit in the Beit Midrash and be close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's no chokhmah. The real challenge is to take it outside. And I remember the Rav saying, the first three chalakim of Shulchan Aruch are all inside the Beit Midrash. It's the laws of davening, and the laws of brachot, and the laws of Shabbat and Yom Tov, and then there's the laws of kashrut, and there's the laws of dinin, nashim, of women, marriage, divorce, and so on. These are all in-house Beit Midrash subjects. But that fourth section, Chosh and Mishpat, which is civil law, how to conduct your business and neighborly relations and so on. He says, that's the real kunst, that's the real chokhmah of who's the Yirei Shamayim. Because in the first three sections, anybody can. And his son, Rav Professor Chaim Soloveitchik, said it differently. He said, in the first three sections of Shulchan Aruch, you can be very, very frum, very religious. And when it comes to the fourth section, you're a pagan. You don't believe that God exists. God doesn't exist when you're on the job, you know. Excuse me? It's the same Torah. It's the same Torah. And that's what it means, la'asok b'divrei Torah. To understand that Torah has a message beyond the walls of the Beit Midrash. And the Chashmonaim indeed understood it, that there was room for Torah on the battlefield and elsewhere beyond the confines of the four amot of Beit Midrash. And they were the Oskei Torah Techa. And they were the Tzadikim, and they were the Torim, and they were the Ma'atim, and they were the Chalashim. So if anybody fits all the bills of these five definitions, they can see themselves as part of the Chashmonaim. And if you fit three out of five, it's not even bad. Not even bad. But it's going to be very difficult putting our finger on one grouping in this country today and saying, yeah, we've defined the Chashmonaim of today. This I would not have the audacity to say that we've done that. But at least as an objective, we call it Shi'ifa, as a type of projection to the future, we should think in terms of, you know, these are the models of what the Chashmonaim has taught us for Chanukah. Okay, we've done something.
I missed one thing.
Yeah.
I'm sure I missed more than one thing, but I think I missed one thing. The five things.